This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Strong winds from nearby Hurricane Dora are fanning the flames of wildfires in Hawaii. They burned buildings to the ground on Maui and forced some people to jump into the harbor to save themselves. Alan DeCar watched businesses disappear in Lahaina.
There were no fire trucks at that point. I think the fire department was already overwhelmed with other fires nearby.
Maui County spokeswoman Mahina Martin.
We have opened multiple emergency shelters throughout the island to assist our residents at this time. Both fire areas are active. Our crews, it's all hands on deck.
Coast Guard reports at least a dozen rescues. Now to Cape Cod, where an EF1 tornado tore a hole in the roof of Marsha DuPont's home in Mattapoisett.
Getting DACA, and I said, let me listen outside. To me, there was a different noise out there, and I'm like, this is not good.
No reports of injuries. Voters in Ohio have rejected a measure that would have made it more difficult to change the state constitution. CBS's Caitlin Huey Byrne says it'll have a major impact on abortion rights.
The results will keep in place a simple majority threshold needed to pass a constitutional amendment in Ohio, 50% plus one vote. The proposal, backed by Republican Secretary of State Frank LaRose, had aimed to raise it to 60%. In November, Ohio will have a ballot measure to enshrine abortion protections in the state constitution, which, according to a recent poll, nearly 58% of voters there support.
Three white men are now facing misdemeanor assault charges in a massive fight that broke out on the riverfront in Montgomery, Alabama, over the weekend. Police Chief Darrell Albert.
There may be more arrests. We're going to look at all the evidence that's continuing to pour in.
If that leads to more serious charges than a misdemeanor, then we'll go down that road.
Video shows several men attacking a black boat captain who tried to get their pontoon out of the way of a larger vessel. Officials in Italy say dozens of migrants are presumed dead after a shipwreck in the Mediterranean last week. Reporter Sabina Castelfranco is in Rome.
Four survivors told rescuers they were on a small metal boat that had set off from Sfax in Tunisia, which capsized and sank just hours after it began its journey last Thursday. A large wave apparently flipped the vessel, causing everyone on board to be thrown into the sea. Three children were among the dead.
Just one winning ticket in last night's $1.5 billion Mega Millions jackpot. It was purchased at a Publix in Neptune Beach, Florida. S&P futures up 5. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Moments like my body.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. Today's the third day of hearings in the Lindley Peters homicide case in Chippewa County to determine where the case will be heard in court. Peters was killed last year and left in the woods near her home in Chippewa Falls. Judge Stephen Gibbs will decide this week whether the lone suspect, a 15-year-old boy, will be tried as an adult or if the case will go to juvenile court. The boy is charged with first-degree intentional homicide, which carries a mandatory life sentence in prison if he's convicted as an adult. Unity High School science teacher Brian Collins will represent Wisconsin in the National Teacher of the Year program. The DPI announced that Collins, one of five Wisconsin Teachers of the Year, will take part in national professional development and represent the state as part of the program. Collins has been a teacher for 22 years at Unity. The National Weather Service in the Twin Cities says that it'll be very summer-like today across much of northwestern Wisconsin, with temperatures into the 80s. There'll be rain chances later today and throughout the rest of the week. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Civic Media isn't just another broadcast company.
We're your neighbors. We bleed green and gold.
And we love nothing more than to help fellow Wisconsinites succeed.
Whether your business wants to advertise to your local community or the entire state, Civic Media can help. Find out more at civicmedia.us.
Professor Schwaber, what grade would you give the Supreme Court for their interpretation of the law?
That doesn't really work. The grade ordinarily would be how accurately and thoughtfully and carefully have you interpreted, existing precedents. I tell you what, though, if I were teaching a course, let's say logic, and I was asked to grade this work in terms of its coherence and its rigor, a high D.
Wow.
A high D.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and Jane Mattenair.
Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. It also delivers vital emergency information when your community needs it most. A new bill in Congress would ensure AM Radio stays in your car. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters. More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
93.5 The Tap. This is 93.5 The Tap.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how.
Hey, welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show on this Wednesday morning, the ninth day of August. Almost 8 minutes after 9 o'clock now. And we've got 63 degrees up in Hayward. In La Crosse, it is 69 degrees right now. And you probably heard about what happened in Ohio yesterday, a special election in Ohio. And the Republicans tried every way they could to make this go their way, but it didn't work out for them. Just to give you a little bit of background on this, earlier this year, I think in January, Republicans in Ohio decided that they weren't going to do any more August elections, right? It's something that they've used in the past to put forth in front of voters controversial issues that they hoped the voters wouldn't even bother to go to the polls for, and get just enough Republicans there so they could pass what it is that they wanted to pass. Well, back in January, they said, well, no more of that. Those August elections cost way too much money. It's money that's just wasted, and so we're going to stop doing those. And then a few months later, they said, well, wait a minute. Maybe we want to do one more August election because in Ohio, it's one of those states where the citizens can make laws. In Ohio, if they gather enough signatures, they can put a measure on the ballot going before the voters and change the laws or create new laws. So it's like the citizens can be legislators. And what happened was the citizens of Ohio got enough signatures to create a ballot measure deciding to put abortion rights, reproductive rights, into the Constitution. And once that happened, then Republicans said, oh, well, maybe we want to change that opportunity for citizens to change the Constitution. Maybe we want to make it a much higher threshold, because up until now, for the past 100 and some years in Ohio, you've been able to get those ballot measures into the election just by getting 50% of the vote, 50% plus one. So all you needed was a simple majority. Then Republicans, who were concerned that Ohio voters might want to change the Constitution and put reproductive rights into the Constitution, allowing women to have access to abortion. Once they realized that was a possibility, they wanted to increase the threshold, said, oh, no, now we need 60% of the voters to approve these ballot measures. Well, the measure to change the threshold went before the voters yesterday, and Ohio voters rejected that in a big way. I think the final number was 57% to 43%. And we're seeing this in a lot of states around the country where ballot measures have been put before the voters concerning reproductive rights. And it's not only in the blue states, but red states like Kansas, right? We saw that vote where Kansas said, no, we want reproductive rights. We want women to be able to access health care, especially if a woman is having a troubled pregnancy and it could lead to her having health issues. Then, you know, there are times when abortion is necessary. So let me give you a little bit of what happened yesterday in Ohio. It says here in the New York Times that Ohio voters rejected constitutional change intended to thwart abortion amendment. The contest was seen as a test of efforts by Republicans nationwide to curb voters' use of ballot initiatives. And this piece was posted yesterday, late last night, at the New York Times. It says Ohio voters rejected a bid on Tuesday to make it harder to amend the state constitution, according to the Associated Press, a significant victory for abortion rights supporters trying to stop the Republican-controlled state legislature from severely restricting the procedure. The abortion question turned what would normally be a sleepy summer election in an off year into a highly visible dogfight that took on national importance and drew an unprecedented number of Ohio voters for an August election. Late results showed the measure losing by 13 percentage points, 56.5% to 43.5%. The roughly 2.8 million votes cast dwarfed the 1.66 million ballots counted in the state's 2022 primary elections, in which races for governor, the U.S. Senate, and the U.S. House were up for grabs. So you see what they're saying there is that there were 2.8 million people that voted yesterday on this ballot measure, and that dwarfed the people who voted, or the number that voted, in the primary elections last year, which had governor, Senate, and House seats up for grabs. Only 1.66 million ballots counted in those primary elections. So it says here the contest was widely seen as a test of Republicans' efforts nationwide to curb the use of ballot initiatives and a potential barometer of the political climate going into the 2024 elections. So in other words, Republicans wanted to take power away from the people. In states like Ohio, the citizens can make laws and change laws. And Republicans didn't like that, so they said, well, we want to boost that threshold up to 60% instead of 50%. This story from the New York Times goes on and says that organizations that opposed the proposal called the vote a decisive rebuff of the state legislature, which had ordered the referendum in an attempt to derail a November vote on a constitutional amendment that would guarantee abortion rights. Quote, it was about a direct connection with the abortion issue for many voters, said Kelly Hall, the executive director of the Fairness Project, one of the leaders of the Ohio campaign against the proposal. But there were many others who saw it as a power grab by some legislators. Well, of course, it's a power grab. If they're taking the power away from the people, power away from the citizens to create their own laws. Executive director of the Fairness Project, Kelly Hall, went on and said the resounding rejection of their attempt means that voters know what's up when they're being asked to vote their rights away. The ballot measure would have required that amendments to the state constitution gain approval by 60% of voters, up substantially from the current requirement of a simple majority. Republicans initially pitched that as an attempt to keep wealthy special interests from hijacking the amendment process for their own gain. The lawmakers voted largely along party lines in May to put the proposal on the ballot. And I just want to interject one thing here. You know, Republicans initially pitched this as an attempt to keep wealthy special interests from hijacking the amendment process. But the thing is, the biggest contributor to those who wanted to change the way laws are put on, or the way the Constitution has changed in Ohio, the biggest contributor was Richard Uihlein, you know, from Illinois, whose business is in Wisconsin, the Uihlein Company. He contributed, I forget the number, but it may be in this story later on, so maybe we'll get to it. But it was by far the biggest contribution. It was millions and millions of dollars in order to try to stop this from happening in Ohio. It's like, why is he even concerned about things that go on in Ohio? Well, because he's concerned about everything that Republicans control, evidently. I'll get to just a little bit more from this story before we have to go to the break. It says, from the start, that reasoning of putting this on the ballot, from the start, that reasoning was overtaken by weightier arguments led by, but hardly confined to, the abortion debate. The Ohio legislature passed some of the nation's strictest curbs on abortion last year, banning the procedure as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy. In the wake of the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, state courts have yet to rule on the constitutionality of those curbs, but the law's passage drove a successful grassroots campaign this year to place an abortion rights amendment on the November ballot. That amendment would upend the new law by giving women legal control over reproductive decisions, allowing doctors to make medical judgments on the need for abortions, and restricting the state to regulating abortions only after a fetus is judged viable. So, good news for women's health advocates coming from Ohio yesterday, last night. People in Ohio said, no, we want reproductive rights. We want to have access to women's health care. And good for them. We've got 18 minutes after 9 o'clock right now. Going to take a quick break. You're tuned in to Stu Daniels Show.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up.
Care about animals or crops, you probably care how the weather could impact both.
It's summer in Wisconsin, and the success of your efforts often depends on knowing the forecast. Count on your local Civic Media weather team for all the information you need.
Crops' roots are also growing deeper in search for water, which is bad news because when rain finally falls, it will sit shallow and be absorbed in the top layers of the soil.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the app.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
ha, ha, ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Shoes. Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Megan Hatton. Building clouds and summer-like conditions expected for Wednesday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms, the high 84. A few storms this evening and overnight, then a clearing trend toward daybreak, low 58. More sunshine with a humidity drop Thursday, high 80. Right now it's 69.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Back to the Stu Daniels Show on Wednesday morning, 22 and a half minutes after 9 o'clock right now. And we've got 65 degrees in Richland Center. In Eau Claire, it's also 65 degrees. Looking for highs today in the low to mid 80s in most places. Eau Claire might see a little rain after about 3 o'clock today. And Amory, a possibility of a slight chance of rain afternoon. And up in Hayward, slight chance of rain between 11 and 5. So just to step away from politics and step away from Wisconsin for a minute, let me ask you this. Have you ever been to Hawaii? And if you have you been to Maui? Well, that's one of my favorite places in the whole world. I can't imagine anything more beautiful and a better place to be than Maui. But there's really sad news coming out of Maui today. Major wildfires. I've got a story here from Maui News Now. It says much of historic Lahaina town believed destroyed as huge wildfire sends people fleeing into the water. This was just posted a few hours ago. Says here that eyewitnesses described an apocalyptic scene on Tuesday in Lahaina Town, where residents were forced to jump into the harbor waters to avoid fast-moving flames from a massive brush fire that's destroyed much of the historic area, and it continues to burn. Residents say an overwhelmed fire force fighting flames all day amid powerful winds could do little as flames ripped through the historic community, destroying dozens of homes and businesses in what onlookers believe is the worst natural disaster in Hawaii's history since Hurricane Iniki. And I don't know when that was, but this must be pretty bad if it's the worst since a big hurricane. Acting Governor Sylvia Luke confirmed that the Hawaii National Guard had been activated to help respond to the sprawling fire crisis. which also includes other raging wildfires. The flames have forced thousands out of their homes, and many aren't sure what they'll find when they return. Officials confirmed to Hawaii News Now that the Coast Guard deployed a helicopter and boat to Front Street Beach and the Lahaina small boat harbor to rescue a number of people from the water. About 10:50 p.m., which would have been, about 5 o'clock in the morning, Wisconsin time, 5 o'clock this morning, the Coast Guard said it had rescued a dozen people from waters off Lahaina. The full scope of the devastation in Lahaina isn't known, but videos on social media show a terrifying wall of flames descending on Front Street in Lahaina and destroying everything in its path. One heart-stopping video posted by fleeing residents shows uncontrolled flames in all directions. The video also shows burned-out cars, but there was no immediate word on injuries. Lahaina resident Tiare Lawrence compared the scene to something out of the apocalypse, with people running for their lives. Quote, "It's just so hard. I'm currently upcountry," which means up the mountain, "and just knowing I can't get a hold of any of my family members. I still don't know where my little brother is. I don't know where my stepdad is," she said. "Everyone I know in Lahaina, their homes have been burned down." Front Street business owner Alan Dakar says he watched business after business in the historic district going up in flames. Buildings, this is a quote, "Buildings on both sides were engulfed. There were no fire trucks at that point. I think the fire department was overwhelmed," Dakar said. "That is the most important business street on Maui," end quote. A Maui County spokesperson confirmed there were multiple structure fires in addition to extensive evacuations in the Lahaina area, but authorities said they were unlikely to ascertain the full extent until well into Wednesday, when winds are expected to die down. The county also said it wasn't immediately clear just how many people jumped into the water off Lahaina to avoid smoke and flames, though they indicated rescue operations were ongoing. Quote, "The Coast Guard has been responding to impacted areas where residents are entering the ocean due to smoke and fire conditions," the county said in a news release about 10 p.m. Tuesday. And I believe Hawaii is about 5 hours behind us. Individuals were transported by the Coast Guard to safe areas. The brush fire in Lahaina is one of at least seven sizable wildfires that firefighters are battling statewide amid treacherous conditions, powerful winds, low humidity, and dry brush. Sounds like a disaster. It's 28 minutes after 9 o'clock. Going to take a break. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Strong winds from Hurricane Dora are fanning the flames of wildfires that have burned buildings to the ground on the Hawaiian island of Maui. County spokeswoman Mahina Martin has... people have taken desperate measures.
We did receive reports that there were residents who had entered the ocean on the West Maui area in response to conditions of smoke and fire.
Voters in Ohio reject a bid to make it harder to change the state constitution to prevent codification of abortion rights. CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns.
Voter turnout in this off-year special election far exceeded expectations. More than 3 million Ohioans turned out to vote. That's a turnout rate of nearly 40%.
About last
last night's $1.5 billion Mega Millions jackpot.
And tonight's winning numbers are 32, 19, 13, 33, 20, and the gold Mega Millions 14.
One person had all the winning numbers. They bought the ticket at a supermarket in Neptune Beach, Florida. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley.
Today's the third day of hearings in the Lily Peters homicide case in Chippewa County to determine where the case will be heard in court. Peters was killed last year and left in the woods near her home in Chippewa Falls. Judge Stephen Gibbs will decide this week whether the lone suspect, a 15-year-old boy, will be tried as an adult or if the case will go to juvenile court. The boy is charged with first-degree intentional homicide, which carries a mandatory life sentence in prison if he's convicted as an adult. Unity High School science teacher Brian Collins will represent Wisconsin in the National Teacher of the Year program. The DPI announced that Collins, one of five Wisconsin Teachers of the Year, will take part in national professional development and represent the state as part of the program. Collins has been a teacher for 22 years at Unity. The National Weather Service in the Twin Cities says that it'll be very summer-like today across much of northwestern Wisconsin, with temperatures into the 80s. There'll be rain chances later today and throughout the rest of the week. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay then, bye.
I've got some cheese curds that I'm willing to share. Then I want to ride that giant slide over there. So if you've got 11 days to spare, won't you come with me to the Wisconsin State Fair? Won't you come with me to the Wisconsin? Great state of Wisconsin!
There's something for everyone at the Wisconsin State Fair, presented by U.S. Cellular, August 3rd through the 13th.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the US Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
There's a classic for you. The Beatles, George Harrison. Man, if anybody ever tells you that George Harrison was underrated as a songwriter, believe him. Because that's what I believe, man. George Harrison, a great songwriter. And there's a great example, too. And we've got 9:36 right now. And up in Hayward, it is 66 degrees. In La Crosse, it's 69 degrees right now. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show on your local Civic Media radio station. And we've been discussing several topics today. And if you have anything you'd like to add, if you have an opinion on anything, feel free to call in. 715-388-7155 is the phone number. And of course, one of the big topics of discussion in the news these days that we can't even avoid is the fact that our former president seems to be receiving new indictments every few weeks. Now there is a story in the New York Times that says the Georgia grand jury is likely to hear the Trump case next week. The district attorney in Atlanta is expected to take the findings from an election interference investigation to a grand jury, which could issue more indictments for the former president. This piece was posted yesterday at the New York Times. It says the fourth criminal case involving Donald Trump is likely to come to a head next week, with the district attorney in Atlanta expected to take the findings from her election interference investigation to a grand jury. The Georgia investigation may be the most expansive legal challenge yet to the efforts that Trump and his advisors undertook to keep him in power after he lost the 2020 election. Nearly 20 people are known to have been told that they could face charges as a result of the investigation, which Fonnie Willis, the district attorney in Fulton County, Georgia, has pursued for 2.5 years. Ms. Willis has signaled that she would seek indictments from a grand jury in the first half of August. In a letter to local officials in May, she laid out plans for most of her staff to work remotely during the first 3 weeks of August amid heightened security concerns. Security barriers were recently erected in front of the downtown Atlanta courthouse, and at lunchtime on Tuesday, yesterday, 16 law enforcement vehicles were parked around the perimeter. On Tuesday afternoon, two witnesses who received subpoenas to appear before the Fulton County grand jury said in interviews that they had not received notices instructing them to testify within the next 48 hours, a sign that the case will not get to the jury until next week. Earlier this month, Trump was indicted in a federal case brought by the special counsel Jack Smith in an investigation also related to election interference that listed a number of unindicted co-conspirators. The Georgia inquiry, elements of which overlap with the federal case, involves not just the former president, but an array of his aides and advisors at the time of the 2020 election, several of whom are expected to face charges. If Trump were to be convicted in a federal prosecution, he could theoretically pardon himself if he were reelected president, but presidents do not hold such sway in state matters. Moreover, Georgia law makes pardons possible only 5 years after the completion of a sentence. Getting a sentence commuted requires the approval of a state panel. Trump's lawyers have described an indictment in Georgia as a foregone conclusion in recent legal filings, and the forewoman of a special grand jury that heard evidence for several months last year strongly hinted afterward that the group which served in an advisory capacity had recommended Trump for indictment. Two grand juries have been hearing cases at the Fulton County Courthouse during the current Superior Court term, which began on July 11th and runs through September 1st. 12 of 23 jurors need to agree that there is probable cause to hand down criminal charges after hearing evidence in a case. Quote, "The work is accomplished," Ms. Willis recently told a local TV station. "We've been working for 2.5 years. We're ready to go," end quote. Her office began investigating in February of 2021 whether the former president and his allies illegally meddled in the 2020 election in Georgia, which Mr. Trump narrowly lost to President Biden. The inquiry focused on five things that happened in Georgia in the weeks after the election. They include calls that Trump made to pressure local officials, including a January 2nd, 2021 call to Georgia's Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, during which Trump said he wanted to find nearly 12,000 votes or enough to reverse his loss. Ms. Willis's office also scrutinized a plan by Trump allies to create a slate of bogus electors for Trump in Georgia, even though Biden's victory had been certified several times by the state's Republican leadership. The office also investigated harassment of local election workers by Trump supporters, as well as lies about ballot fraud that were advanced by Rudy Giuliani, Trump's personal lawyer at the time, and other allies during legislative hearings after the election. At times, the investigation stretched beyond Fulton County, including to rural Coffee County, about 200 miles southeast of Atlanta, where Trump allies and contractors working on their behalf breached the election system in the first week of 2021. Ms. Willis has said that by bringing charges under Georgia's version of the Racketeer-Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, also known as RICO, her inquiry could cover a wide range of issues. Broadly speaking, so-called RICO laws require prosecutors to prove that a group of people conspired to take part in organized criminal activity. With RICO indictments, Ms. Willis said in an interview last year, quote, "There are sometimes acts that occurred outside of the jurisdiction that are overt acts that we can use if they are evidence of the greater scheme," end quote. The special grand jury heard evidence in the case for roughly 7 months and recommended more than a dozen people for indictment, or for indictments, its forewoman has said. The Trump aides and allies whose conduct has been scrutinized in the inquiry include Giuliani, who was told last year that he was a target who could face charges. A number of other lawyers who worked to keep Trump in power have also been under scrutiny in the investigation, including John Eastman, Sidney Powell, Jenna Ellis, and Kenneth Cheesebrough. Mark Meadows, the former White House chief of staff, was ordered to testify before the special grand jury last year. He traveled to Georgia after the election and became personally involved in the efforts to keep Trump in office despite his loss. Ms. Willis's office also sought the testimony of Jeffrey Clark, a former high-ranking official at the Justice Department, but was blocked by the department. Clark sought to intervene in Georgia on Trump's behalf after the 2020 election over the strong objections of more senior officials at the department. More than half of the 16 Republicans who were bogus Trump electors in Georgia are cooperating with Ms. Willis's office, but others have been told they could face charges, including David Schaefer, the former leader of the state Republican Party in Georgia. Trump's lawyers have called the Atlanta inquiry a clown show and have filed numerous court motions seeking to disqualify the district attorney and derail the investigation. They argued that the special grand jury proceedings were unconstitutional and that Ms. Willis has made prejudicial public statements, or prejudicial public statements. But Georgia judges have shown no inclination to act before any charges are brought. Both the presiding Fulton Superior Court Judge Robert McBurney and Georgia Supreme Court and the Georgia Supreme Court have rejected motions from the Trump team in recent weeks. Two witnesses have been subpoenaed to appear before Fulton grand jurors currently hearing cases. They are George Chidi, an independent journalist, and Jen Jordan, a former state senator. So it says here, two witnesses have been subpoenaed to appear before Fulton grand jurors currently hearing cases. And evidently one of them, Jen Jordan, said Tuesday afternoon that they had not received 48-hour notices to appear this week. Mr. Chidi was one of a handful of reporters who discovered a December 2020 meeting of bogus Trump electors, and Ms. Jordan, a Democrat, attended a legislative hearing in which Giuliani and other Trump allies advanced false claims of election fraud. This has been a busy year for Trump's lawyers. In April, he was indicted in state court in Manhattan on 34 felony counts related to his role in what prosecutors described as a hush money scheme, covering up a potential sex scandal to clear his path to the presidency in 2016. In June, he was indicted in Miami on federal criminal charges related to his handling of classified documents and whether he obstructed the government's efforts to recover them after he left office. So it sounds like next week is when the Georgia grand jury will likely hear the Trump case, possibly hand down some indictments. It's indictment season right now. 9:47. Going to take a quick break. It's a short one. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' hot Cheetos chicken on a stick? Deep-fried old-fashioned? Or Pino pretzel popper brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long. Close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino pretzel popper brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
I'm meteorologist Megan Hatton. Building clouds and summer-like conditions expected for Wednesday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms, the high 84. A few storms this evening and overnight, then a clearing trend toward daybreak, low 58. More sunshine with a humidity drop Thursday, high 80. Right now it's 69.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
would sing sweet songs to rock my soul. River, don't you take me, sing me sweet and sleepy. Sing me sweet and sleepy all the way back home. It's a far gone lullaby I sung many years ago. Mama, mama, many worlds I've gone since I first left home. Going home, going home, by the waterside I will rest my bones. Listen to the river sing sweet songs to rock my soul. Gone to plant a weeping willow on the bank's green edge. It will grow, grow, grow. Sing a lullaby beside sweet songs to rock my soul.
Music from Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead, Broke Down Palace, on this Wednesday morning, the 9th of August. It was on this date in 1995 that Jerry passed away. And today ends what is known among deadheads as the days between, August 1st being Jerry's birthday, August 9th being his death day. So we've been kind of commemorating Jerry during these days between. And it was, about 3 weeks ago that we lost Tony Bennett. And you may not know it, but Tony Bennett and Jerry Garcia were good friends. In this headline here from the San Diego Union-Tribune, it says, a quote from Tony Bennett says, "We didn't talk about music at all," said Tony Bennett. And I'm going to give you just a little bit of this story before we wrap things up for today. It says, the unlikely friendship between Tony Bennett, who died on Friday. I should mention this story was posted on July 23rd, who died Friday at 96 years old, and Garcia preceded Garcia's 1995 death by several decades. Quote, "We respected one another," Bennett said in a 1998 interview. Tributes have poured in from around the world to singing legend Tony Bennett, who died Friday at the age of 96. Yet, while many facets of Bennett's remarkable eight-decade career are being recalled, there is at least one unlikely chapter in his life that drew little attention then or now. His friendship with Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead. Garcia died in 1995, several decades after he and Bennett had forged a bond. While Bennett was most assuredly not a deadhead, he and Garcia were kindred spirits of a sort. Quote, "Tony used to be good friends with Jerry." Former Dead keyboardist Vince Welnick, who died in 2006, told the San Diego Union-Tribune in a 1998 interview. In a subsequent interview that same year, Bennett confirmed his friendship with Garcia He also candidly discussed his own years of drug use before he got clean and sober. And so it says, here is that article. I guess you're supposed to click on this, but it says Tony Bennett and Jerry Garcia. What could the suave, 8-time Grammy Award winning pop and jazz singer have in common with Captain Trips, as the deceased leader of the Grateful Dead was known back in the halcyon days of hippiedom in the late 1960s? A lot more than you think. Quote, Tony used to be good friends with Jerry, said former Dead keyboardist Vince Welnick. In fact, Jerry helped reunite Tony with one of his children after they took off to the hog farm, which was a commune in California, and Tony couldn't reach them. So he called Jerry to help get in touch with them, and he did. Let's just say he was grateful to Jerry for finding his child back in the 1960s. Tony may not be a Deadhead, but he was certainly a friend of Jerry's. He came to Dead shows, and I sat with him in the Jerry tent at Madison Square Garden more than once. Garcia, Welnick, and Grateful Dead co-founder Bob Weir sang the national anthem together at a 1993 San Francisco Giants baseball game. Bennett was also on hand to perform his signature song, I Left My Heart, in San Francisco at the game. But there's no mention of Garcia or the Dead in Bennett's recently published autobiography, The Good Life. When asked, the 72-year-old singer initially downplayed his relationship. And by the way, this article, of course, was written when Bennett was 72 years old. The 72-year-old singer initially downplayed his relationship with the Dead's fabled lead guitarist, who died at a Bay Area drug treatment center on August 9th, 1995. All right. So that wraps up another show. Thanks to Jerry Garcia for all the great music, and thanks to you for tuning in today. Have a great day. I'll see you tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.